This is Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and your questions, all about NPB. And now your hosts, Johnny Gibson and Jin Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of November 11th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Saturday night here in Alabama this time, I'm a traveling man, and a Sunday morning in Tokyo is my buddy Jim Allen. What's happening, dude? You feeling better?
I felt better during the week, and I've got a new cold.
Yeah, he said, define better, he says.
Yeah. No, I'm not better than I was a week ago this time. I was getting over my cold then. I was on my way to the Japan series. Yeah, I felt okay, but I felt good for 4 days, and then Tokyo cold hit me. And I've got the Tokyo cold. So. coughing and runny nose. Last week it was fever and sore throat. So I'm at the sort of club and cold smorgasbord. Get a little taste of everything.
Oh gosh. Well, no, tell your runny nose to sit down and take a break, and hopefully everything else will calm down for a little while so we can talk some baseball. Okay. Thank you again for playing Hurt. So on this week's show, we've got a discussion about the Japan series finishing up with Yokohama, the DeNA Bay Stars, as the champions for the first time in 26 years. And then we look at some of the new managers, discuss the passing of friend Marty Kienert. We talk about Roki Sasaki being posted, and we hit some other topics, so let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so I have to tell this story. So the Bay Stars, obviously, we recorded early that morning. They finished things up later that night last week. Yoshitomo Tsugo gets into the game, hits a home run early on, and the rout was on early in this game. It ends 11-2. The Bay Stars beat, surprise, and I also want to call it a reverse sweep, because they lost the first two games of this series, but they came back and won four straight, not only stopping that Japan series record 14 consecutive victories by the Hawks, but then putting it on them with pinning four straight losses on a team that had really dominated in the Japan series, obviously. So, so that was the most impressive thing to me. I don't, you can talk about right. All the pitching and defense, and this dude did that, and that guy was hot, or there wasn't really no particularly. I mean, we talked about Masayuki Kuwahara, how well he played, but I think they did well around him as well. It wasn't just one guy who tore up the Hawks, you know, it was the whole team. And yeah, that's why I mentioned the manager of it. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, when your leadoff hitter drives in 9 runs and one is on a solo homer, it's because he was constantly coming up with runners on base. The bottom of the lineup.
Yes.
And I think, and to go back to the bit about the Hawks, this is historic, because the Hawks had won the last eight Japan series they'd played.
Wow. Yeah. That's a pretty healthy streak, huh? Eight.
Correct. The last time the Hawks won, lost a Japan series, they were the Daiei Hawks. Sanahara Oh was the manager.
And I don't think I had taken this job. Oh, no. Did I?
You were in America then.
Yes, I was. Yeah.
And the Hawks won the first two. The Hawks were the defending Japan series champions, and they beat the Yomiuri Giants 2 games at Tokyo Dome. And then they came back and lost the next 4.
Yeah.
That was the Brain Surgeon series.
Yeah. So it's quite impressive. I think it's one of the more masterful Japan series managing jobs in terms of having his players ready. I don't know about pushing buttons. I don't think the games were close in some aspects, but Daisuke Miura, the manager of the Bay Stars, just had the guys ready all the time and had a plan. And then I think they executed the plan as a team. It wasn't, you know, this move was a great move or putting this pitcher in at this moment, because I don't really think he had options a lot of times, and he got great starting pitching from his guys. And that was the whole key. So go ahead.
Okay. He got great starting pitching, and he got great work from the bullpen with a couple of really tiny exceptions. And as far as the lineup goes, the only real lineup change he made is when Tyler Austin got hurt, he used he brought in Keita Sano. He brought in, you know, used Keita Sano, and then he used then Sano came out. When Sano did nothing, he brought in Yoshitomo Tsutsugo, and that was basically it. Everything else was the cut and paste. But in my opinion, the job, the attacking, and I do want to ask if I might have a chance to ask Yasutaka Tobashira, the catcher, if what the plan was against the Hawks that worked so well, because they took Japan's best offense and made them look like chumps.
Yeah. And so I just have, that's why I want to credit the manager just for having the team ready and having the game plan and then putting the guys out there and letting them go at it. And they just looked confident. And you talked about it last week that Anthony Kay mentioned he didn't see much adjustment from the Hawks side. But I'm thinking, well, maybe they're just figuring that the Bay Stars were going to come at them in a different way because they knew they had done that already and had success with it. So they had to figure out a different game plan. So they were just waiting for that game plan to change. And by the time they figured out it wasn't changing, the game was over. So, or the series was over too. So, but yeah. One of my friends said her brother was watching TV that night. So the game was on November 3rd. And so watching game six of the Japan series and watching the Bay Stars take down the Mighty Hawks filled his eyes with tears. And he wept watching this game. And then I had a mutual friend from the Yomiuri who sent me an email. He is a longtime Bay Stars fan / sufferer. And he mentioned that he just couldn't believe it. He this came out of nowhere. He and I spoke earlier in the season. The Bay Stars need to do better against the better competition in the Central League, the top competition, I should say, the top teams in the Central League, and that they were struggling with that. And if they can't get past that, they're not going to win anything. And of course, they did it when it counted most. They figured out a way to beat the teams that finished above them in the standings. You know, Michael Westbay chimed in with me on chat, and he was obviously happy. I still don't know that he actually believed it was really happening. You know, I got the feeling like, you know, this was one of those alternate worlds that he was watching, in which he was watching TV and his favorite team of all time was winning the Japan series and making him happy. And he was thrilled about Tsutsugo doing well and Shugo Maki doing well in times, although he was a disappointment, Michael said, at times, but he came through toward the end. And it was just, it was like child, you know, like your childhood dreams come true when your team wins like that. It was just fantastic for the Bay Stars fans. I'm really happy for them.
Yeah, I can sympathize with the alternate reality feeling, because I spent my entire life until I was, 50 years old, believing that it would be impossible for the San Francisco Giants to ever win a World Series. Right. They'd been in three since I was born, and came within inches of winning one before I was conscious of my memories, 1962. Mm-hmm. And created a very famous series of Peanuts cartoon strips, which I didn't understand at the time, but which Charlie Brown laments that Willie McCovey didn't hit a ball a foot higher than he did. that was the final.
I'm laughing,
out
but I don't remember that. Yeah.
Well, that was the final out of the 1962 series, in which he hit what many people called the hardest ball they've ever seen hit, right into shoulder high to Bobby Richardson at second base to end the series with the winning run on second base. Anyway, so after that, I got used to the, you know, every disaster that could befall the Giants would happen in the World Series, and they lost to the A's, who couldn't beat anybody else in the World Series at that time, to the Dodgers or the Reds, and then they lost to the Angels. I mean, losing to the Angels, of course, now it's not as bad now then as it was is now.
Well, but, yeah, because they actually had some players, but
yeah, they had some players.
They're still the Angels, though. I mean, come on.
Yeah, they're still the Angels, but
that's still embarrassing. I gotta be honest.
Where it was like they were gonna win, and then something weird happened.
Yeah.
and it just collapsed. It was a seventh game collapse after a sixth game fluke loss. So anyway, I'm thinking, 2010. Who? What is this? The Giants win the World Series. Don't stop messing with me.
Oh well, so,
I'm sorry for the long analogy, but that's my story.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm glad you had so many nice things to say about the Bay Stars winning here.
Yeah, no, I do, actually. No, I do, because
I'm just kidding.
But I've already said them mostly. I think they were completely unfazed. I just don't, the Hawks, as I think I said this last week, they looked like a team that was getting no hit, where in the start everything was okay, but by about the third inning, they realized they had absolutely no clue what pitch was coming next. And they were taking, the pitch was coming right down the middle and they were taking it and they were swinging at stuff outside the zone because they were sure it was not they were sure it was the pitch that they were looking for and it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
They looked completely baffled. And if Kenta Imamiya hadn't played such an absolutely amazing shortstop and had so many hits, the Hawks could have lost this series in five games, because
right.
both of the games in Yokohama were surprisingly close. Both of the Hawks wins there, and they wouldn't have been wins. Both of them wouldn't have been wins without Imamiya having radar homing in his shoes to get to balls and making the throws.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I didn't see all the plays, so I can't comment on every single play. I was listening to some. I saw highlights. They were good. The Bay Stars were great when they had to be. And they talk about competitive greatness. I don't know if you've ever heard that phrase, but being your best when your best is required, when it's time when the team needs you to come up with your best performance. And I think a lot of the Bay Stars, I wouldn't say all of them, but definitely, I always talk about the fine line that these teams are not that far separated. We like to think they are, that these pitchers are just far more dominant than maybe they are. But you talked about the fact that the pitching and defense go together and guys get the bats on the ball. So you got to make plays behind your pitchers and good decisions when you get the ball and throw to the right bases and all the things the Yankees didn't do against my Dodgers, thankfully, in that fateful game five. But, the Bay Stars were able to, not that they did it every time, but they were able to do enough of that. And they had, Kuwahara playing, what did he hit, 444 in the series? And
I think really higher than that.
Mike thinks it's on game five. Yeah, on game six, I'm sorry, on November 3rd, it's ending with him at 444. And he had three hits and three RBIs.
I was going to say it was some closer to like 471 at one point. So
yeah, so, I mean, they just they showed competitive greatness. They were at their best. And I don't think I can't say that the Hawks weren't. I can say that the Bay Stars made them look like they weren't. Because I think they had something, they definitely had a say in the matter. It wasn't just the Hawks being bad, it was the Bay Stars just being that much better. And so I was thrilled for the Central League. I was thrilled for Bay Stars fans, long suffering Bay Stars fans. We got to add that. That's, we're contractually obligated to say things like that with teams that have tremendous droughts. And again, of course, they've done it. The last time they won the Japan Series, they had won a Central League pennant, but they did not this year. The Bay Stars went through the route of finishing in third place in the league standing. So it's just amazing. Just amazing.
The MVPs were Kuwahara, and the MVP was Kuwahara. There's four outstanding performance awards. One is called the Fighting Spirit Award, which is the loser's prize. The consolation prize.
Consolation prize, yes.
Yeah, so that went to Kenta Imamiya, of course. And mm-hmm. the three Bay Stars outstanding performers were Yoshitomo Tsutsugo and Anthony Kay and Andre Jackson. So,
yes.
Wow, just so sweet. I mean, I just, unfortunately, my biggest regret was that I had an early deadline that night. Well, I had a normal deadline, but the base Stars did not make their players available to the media until until about the time I had to file my stories.
Yeah.
So I didn't get to talk to any of those guys.
Respect for the press, man.
Yeah, last year, and here's the thing. Last year, we I think it was because the Hunching Tigers won as the visitors.
Uh-huh.
That they didn't have a whole long thing on the field. Instead, they players celebrated, you know, they had a little bit on the field. They, you know, did stuff in the clubhouse, jumped around and act like fools, which is their duty. But then the Tigers media, which is typically stodgy at best, brought the players one by one out into the corridor where the media could talk to them. You mm-hmm. know, it was like actual service.
like it, just yeah, like it, just resembled, not the real thing.
It was, no, but it was actually, as far as
it was an effort, though.
Goes, yeah. When they typically ignore the press mm-hmm. and everything's for TV, it was very, very good. It was very, very good. I think if the Marines ever win the Japan series, if they keep their current press corps, then they'll probably ask the reporters to buy tickets. to enter the mixed zone space and then make them walk up two flights of stairs and down two flights of stairs instead of going through the door.
Up two flights of stairs both ways, right?
Yeah, exactly. Up and down. It's like go up.
No, no,
stairs,
up and up.
Yeah.
Up and Sorry. Up some more. Yeah.
Yeah. No down elevator here. Sorry.
All right. Well, congratulations. And Michael Westbay, congratulations to your Bay Stars, buddy. I'm sure you're Indeed. Happy. And that was just a great moment. All right. Let's move on, since that's kind of old news. And we do want to report that we lost a friend, Marty Kienert. Gosh, he was into so many things. He was, I guess, best known recently as he was the first general manager of the Golden Eagles of Rockton when the team was born back in the early 2000s. And then, gosh, he was a bar owner. I saw him on TV. You know some of the other things he was involved in, Jim?
He was, I didn't know a lot of this. I've been reading up on Marty. I mean, I knew Marty, and Marty was always very opinionated, a bit of a know-it-all.
Well, a Stanford grad, he's up there from the Bay, man, or he went to school in the Bay. Right? What are you talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Know-it-all, guy who talks a lot, okay. Remind you of anybody?
Hashtag hi.
Okay. Yeah, well, he's from LA, so I guess that explains it.
Well, I don't care. He got poisoned up there.
Well, I'll be honest. Now, I can't speak for Stanford, but the Bay Area is probably Bay Area and Boston are perhaps the two snobbiest parts of the United States. So I didn't know it when I didn't realize it when I lived there because I was you know, I was there. I was one of them.
Yeah.
Anyway, so getting away from that, I realized it. But no, he was a bit of a he was extremely knowledgeable
yes.
about lots of things about Japanese baseball. He was he had worked in the California League with the independent Lodi
mm-hmm.
when they were being run as an independent team. There were a couple of independent single A teams then, and he was the general manager of one of those teams. And then because of that, he got I think he was named league executive of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And he got caught up with the Lions in their post-scandal years when Nishitetsu Lions were the center of the game fixings, the Black Mist game fixing scandals in the early 70s. And they kept the team afloat by selling the naming rights
mm-hmm.
first to a Taiheyo Club, which was a golf course developer. And he worked for Taiheyo Club as in their front office, and they were like operating on a shoestring, and they sold it to another company. They sold the naming rights to another company when Taiheyo couldn't pony up anymore, and they were run by a cigarette lighter manufacturer. You know, it's like it was just a thing anyway. So he was really knowledgeable about that stuff, but he was also ultra opinionated, and he said some of the most outlandish things that had absolutely no basis in reality sometimes, just because he assumed they were true because of his experience. So, you know, that happens. I mean, I'm guilty of doing that sometimes. It can never happen because I can't conceive of it happening. Right. Famously, he said when, ironically, 29 years ago, hold on. Yeah, 29 years ago, Hideki Urabu was telling the Lotte Marines that he was going to America and they couldn't stop him.
Mm-hmm.
And Marty came out with a column in the Japan Times saying there's no way Lotte will ever let him go because they have no reason to. There'll never be a player moving to MLB again because NPB has plugged the holes and there will never be another Hideo Nomo. And that was about two weeks before Hideki Urabu moved to MLB.
Yeah, not good timing. So, yeah,
so it happens. I mean, it happens to all of us. Obviously, we'll get to the sort of coda to that story later. But yeah, so things, you know, you never know what's going to happen if you're basing it purely on experience and precedent.
Right, right.
So, but anyway, Marty, and that was Marty, but he was also kind and generous and a superior networker and storyteller and somebody who brought people together. I first met Trey Hillman, the manager of the Fighters, because Marty organized a welcome party for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember all the Rob Small and the Japan Times beat writer at the time
I don't remember his name either. Yeah,
I remember him. Wayne Grassick and I, and I don't think Bob was there, but maybe Jim Small was there, and we all had dinner at Outback in Shibuya, and it was really nice. And yeah, that was Marty's thing. Marty was a generous and friendly guy. You know, he was a unique original, a college athlete with Stanford. He had experience. He knew a lot about how Japanese baseball worked from the lowest levels, his children having gone through youth baseball here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, twins too. Yeah, I remember twins.
Yeah, so my heart is broken.
Yeah, definitely miss him. I came to know Marty first by watching TV in Japan as part of my studies. I would always watch TV, and of course there was no internet, so what else are you going to do? I saw him on TV, and then I actually saw him in person at the Chunichi Crowns golf tournament in the 90s sometime in Aichi Prefecture. And he was the MC at the event, and I was so impressed. I'd seen him on TV, and I thought, well, you know, there's a guy remembering his lines. But when you get out on a golf course and you're the MC introducing the players who are coming up to swing, and of course you have a little bit of a bio on them, but he was really good in announcing the players as they came up. In Japanese, and I was just impressed with the fact that he was able to get that kind of a gig as a foreign guy. And then years later, when I was dating my wife, Marty was still involved with the Eagles, obviously. And so he said, hey, if you ever come up to Sendai, just let me know, and we'll get you some tickets and you can stay, you can watch the game. And so I said, you know what, Marty, and everybody says those things, but when I actually called and said, I want to take my wife up to Sendai for a game, he said, okay, you tell me the date. And he got tickets for us, and we sat and watched the game, and he gave us a tour before the game. We went to the ballpark. He gave us a tour of the entire ballpark.
Mm.
And then we watched the game.
Was that the year when he was still GM?
No, he was not GM anymore. So it was after.
Yeah, he did one year. He was the first GM because Hiroshi Mikitani said he wanted somebody who was unsullied.
Sure. Okay.
Because 2004 was the labor year, but it was also the Eagles were born out of labor strife as the players kept the league from contracting. But the Eagles were also born in the year when the heads of three NPB teams stepped down because their teams had been giving cash payouts to a college pitcher.
Okay, yeah.
And the Eagles were going to draft this guy first, because Yasuhiro Ichiba, because everybody else was tainted. And so he said, I don't want any, you know, I don't want any, I want somebody who's a little, who knows baseball, but who's an outsider. Well, they got Marty, and I'll tell you a story. I was up at Sendai for, you know, visited their spring training camp. Me and Wayne Grassick and I visited their spring training camp. And I was up in Sendai for their opening games. And Marty was doing all this public service announcements on the big screen at Miyagi Stadium. And they were so well produced. You know, he was telling fans how to act at the ballpark and, you know, don't smoke and don't do this and don't, you know, don't bother people and cheer for the team.
Typical PSAs.
Yeah, exactly. But they were funnier than all heck. And Marty was really popular with the fans. It's like wherever he went, people wanted to take selfies with him and, you know, and have pictures of him with them holding their babies. And he got fired after 1 year after the Eagles had the worst season in history. Now, I don't know about Marty's credentials to be a GM. I just don't know. I don't really have any evidence to believe that he would have done any better moving forward. He was the one who, you know, it was behind kind of a Bass Ackwards plan for the first season. He and manager Yasushi Tao, who also got the boot. But another thing was, one story was that Hiroshi Mikitani didn't want somebody with the team to be more popular than him.
Where have we seen that before?
Yeah,
Dallas Cowboys.
So that was part of the dynamic. But Marty was popular, and he stayed on doing the job he was absolutely made for, which was community relations.
Yes, yes, and like I said,
mean, he was born to be an outreach guy and having kind words for everybody. Even if, you know, afterwards he said, boy, what a scumball that guy is. You can't believe what he asked of me.
Right. And we've had him on the show a couple times, maybe two, three times, but at least twice doing one regular interview. And then when we did a roundtable discussion, he was pretty much the star of the show for that first roundtable discussion that we did. So, yeah. Yeah. Great guy. We're going to miss him. And he was fairly young at 78. He's younger than my father. So it came as quite a surprise. For me, I didn't know he was ill, and it was an illness. And Robert Whiting wrote in his newsletter that it was complications from heart surgery. So, but we'll miss him. You know, I still think of especially the time when we had that roundtable discussion, how great Marty was and how he started the thing off so great. So we miss him. I'm sure the Japanese community as well.
Yeah, I've got to plug that and listen to it again. I'm so. Yeah, we're going to miss him.
We're missing. I want to move on. I want to circle back and just briefly hit on the new managers. We talked about it before that there were so many new managers named and had gone through. So let's go through them real quick. And then I just want to talk about the guy I think I'm looking for next year to, I mean, first of all, there were surprises, of course, but guys, I'm just looking for change the organization a little bit and take it in a different direction. Number one, the player who I guess this is in no particular order at all, not even order that, not even chronologically. Fumiya Nishiguchi is going to take over at Seibu, and that one was kind of a surprise for me. I don't know how you felt about it, but I really didn't see this one coming. But you know, Hisanobu Watanabe, who took over after they dumped Kazuo Matsui midway through the season, just is out of the organization. And then, you know, to hear that Nishiguchi is taking over was somewhat a surprise, but again, not that big a surprise. What did you think of it?
Nishiguchi, well, I'll tell you, I have very little input in my brain and calculations about Nishiguchi. He was a guy as a pitcher. He was one of those pitchers who I think if he struck out 27 batters and hit a home run to win a 1-0 perfect game, he would say, I didn't do anything.
Yeah.
He was one of those guys. He didn't want to talk. He didn't want to be in the spot. He didn't want to be in the spotlight if it meant he had to say anything. So I have really zero opinion of him, except he did cut my lone. He was a tremendous pitcher, and my lone memory of him besides his numerous failings to get a no-hitter, to his numerous near runs. He had about three or four of them. He threw yes. a bunch of one-hitters, and he had a perfect game. I think he had a perfect game through 10 innings once that he lost a no-hitter against the aforementioned Yasuhiro Ichiba, who also had a no-hitter through 9 innings. And he lost that next innings. And when Kona Takahashi lost a no-hitter with two outs in the 9th inning in Sendai a couple of years ago, Nishiguchi was the pitching coach, and Takahashi was wearing number 13 as Nishiguchi had. And after the game, Nishiguchi came to him and said, "I'm sorry you got my number."
You got my
because
book.
It's not a good one for no hitters.
Right.
So,
all right.
Last thing about that is that Sadoharu Oh had a nice comment about him in Yokohama the other day, and that was he shared my belief that it's a huge plus to have a guy coming out as the farm team manager.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the Lions farm team, I don't think is really doesn't have all that much talent to dig out, simply because he's been with the guys who working on the farm, and he knows their abilities better than anybody.
Sure. Okay. Well, let me do what I was going to do first, which is to list them off and then get us. Okay. No, I got myself out of order. But so former reliever Mamoru Kishida is the man at Oryx. Also, he was the farm team manager. Kazuki Inoue takes over at Chunichi. He was a former Chunichi player and then was doing some coaching at Hanshin and then rejoined the Chunichi organization. Hajime Miki takes over at Rakuten after the surprise dumping of Toshiaki Imae, and then Kyuji Fujikawa takes over at Hanshin, I don't know if he's a former pitcher and went to the major leagues, so he's got that experience of knowing a lot of sides. He was a starter and a reliever and all those things, I believe. So now which one of these guys do you think is someone we should keep an eye on for next season?
I think my eyes are on Kazuki Inoue, only because I know him, and I don't know any of the other guys. Oh, I do know Fujikawa, but he's a star and he's a smart guy. But I think I like Kazuki Inoue, even though the Dragons organization is a bit of a circus, and I think he can square those things that he can.
Hmm.
So that's, I think there'll be a better team under him than under Tatsunami, because he's a guy who he doesn't bring old school baggage like a Tatsunami.
Did you pronounce
one.
Garbage wrong, or did you say baggage?
Hashtag high heat.
Baggage. He's not trying to turn back the clock. And as I mentioned before, there's a whole, you have to play a kind of a PR game with the media.
Right.
You have to some degree suck up to them and say the way you old guys played baseball 50 years ago is the way we have to play baseball.
Right.
And Shinosuke Abe was like, he's the master of that. and Tatsunami was the one who believed it. He really believed that stuff, and he came out trying to do it, and it was kind of a problem. Anyway, so I like Kazuki Inoue, but I also like Fujikawa because I do know him as well, and I don't know, he also has no experience coaching and managing, which is not a plus.
Yeah, it's not ideal, I don't think. Yeah, I don't. I really don't know what to expect from this group, but I certainly don't expect much to change on the Chunichi front, because I was sure you said garbage when you were trying to say old school.
No, baggage.
It sounded a lot like garbage because that's what Tatsunami brought. But I don't know that Inoue makes a big difference over there. I don't know where the problems lie. So I'm hoping, obviously, as a fan, but I wouldn't anticipate that. I was thinking Kyuji Fujikawa might bring some relief. Let's say comic relief and some smiles and just a different attitude to the Hanshin vibe that goes on out there. And that's why I was thinking he might make a bigger difference. Because a lot of the things that, you know, he played there a long time, he's used to the garbage, he's used to people yelling and screaming, and he always kept that smile and that positivity. It seemed that was his persona. We obviously don't get to see them in the clubhouse after a game, right? Because sometimes if you're a pitcher and you don't have especially as in his situation, he was a closer a lot of times or a late inning guy, high leverage pitcher, and you go and you have a bad night, we don't see him, you know, we don't get to see him kicking the locker or throwing a mm-hmm. glove or all those other things. But after their cooling down period and they're going through the mix zone to go home or whatever, and he's talking to the media, he just always seemed to bring some positivity and some a smile at least, or jokes or whatever, some lightness to the situation. Yeah. And so that's why I think I would look at him to make a little bit of a difference in that respect. Akinobu Okada was a no nonsense kind of a guy. He wasn't overly negative, but he wasn't always positive either. He was just kind of middle of the road guy. You know what I mean? He wasn't pumping guys up, and he wasn't really bringing them down, but he wasn't pumping them up. So I mean, I want to see that.
But again, that's the, in my, as everybody knows this by now, if you, any listener or reader knows this, the biggest thing you need to do at Hanshin Tigers is be media neutral.
Yes. Yes.
You can't be the guy feeding the trolls, which is basically what most Hanshin Tigers, every Hanshin Tigers manager in the last 20 years, except Okada, Hoshino, mm-hmm. well, Hoshino did a little bit, but Hoshino was special. Okay, with the exception of Okada and Akihiro Yano, he gave into the temptation to get the media off his back by letting them blame the players.
Yeah.
And Okada didn't play that, and Yano didn't play that. And since Yano came on, the Tigers have basically finished second every year except one time. Two times, once when they finished third.
Yeah. So, interesting. Now, the other guys, Kishida, I don't know what to expect there. Miki, I don't know much about him.
Miki is managed for 1 year, and then he managed to... 2 years ago, actually. And then when he was fired, they reassigned him to the farm team.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's replacing Toshiaki Imai, which is, well, the thing with Imai is interesting because they got Imai because he had boosted the Eagles' decrepit offense the year before when he came from the farm team, and they started hitting as soon as he showed up in May.
Mm-hmm.
And the Eagles' offense this year was actually very good.
It was surprisingly good.
And so he did exactly what they wanted, but they forgot to say, oh, sorry, half your pitchers are, yeah, Masahiro Tanaka is going to be hurt. Takayuki Kishi is going to take another step back in his availability and effectiveness. And you're going to have one useful starting pitcher the entire year.
Yeah, thanks. So,
yeah, thanks exactly. For the help. So, yeah. Okay, that's your fault. So yeah. They essentially fired him for having no starting pitching.
Yeah, I don't get it. Yeah, and Miki was the manager in 2020.
Sorry, 2020. Oh, right. Yeah. He was the manager before Kazuhisa Ishii, who is still back. And speaking of weird things, and he's back as general manager. He's still general manager. While at Seibu, Watanabe at Seibu basically said, I'm sorry, I've had enough of this dog and pony show.
Yeah, I need my cigarettes. It's basically
exactly. Smokes. I mean, I love him to death. I just think he's the greatest guy. But this team has been so, it's like they're like a boss I used to have at the Yomiuri. Every challenge was redouble your efforts, we're not going to do nothing, but you do all the work. The reason we're failing is because you're not doing four times what we expected of you. And that's Alliance, you know, the front office is giving all this tiering stuff, and it comes to, you know, what free agents can we sign and how can we keep our free agents? Like, oh, those guys want to leave us. Why should we even talk to them?
Jeez.
You know, they get all schoolyard on them. And so I think Watanabe, who actually had kind of a plan, but the talent was not coming through the pipeline and the Lions were unable to hold on any of their useful stars. So
sure.
That wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah, so Mickey went 55 and 57 in that truncated 2020 season. So we'll see what he brings to the Eagles. But I don't remember any characteristics or anything about his management style or anything that I can mention here. I think he kind of just got lost in the weeds. But just to put things into perspective about the managers going into the 2025 season, Tsuyoshi Shingo stands as the longest tenured manager in the Pacific League.
I was like, what?
Yeah,
I mean, he was like the guy who was probably voted most likely to be fired after something appeared in Friday Magazine, if Friday Magazine is
After a week.
Yeah, I know.
You'd say after a week, most likely to be fired after a week, but yeah.
And here's the thing, at the end of the season, at the end of when the playoffs finished, it wasn't certain that he was going to stick around. Now, I 100% think the Fighters gave him an option. And I don't mean an ultimatum. They said, do you want to manage next year? We'll be happy to have you if you want to stay on. And he said, I'll do it. So, good for them. I think they have plan B is ready on their farm team, where they're the star of the team in the first decade of the 2000 of this millennium. Atsunori Inaba has been managing and ready to take over. So they're basically ready. They're looking like, they got their plan set up. And as long as Shinjo wants to do it, and as long as the team's going to win, they're going to stick with him.
Yep. So, yeah, Shinjo took over the Fighters in 2022, and with three new skippers and Hiroki Kokugo, the Hawks, putting in his first year this season, he's the guy with the resume. So just think about that as we move along.
Hiroki Kokugo. Yeah. ghost of Premier 12's past. Gosh, yeah, I don't really know. I have thought about looking into the bullpen usage in the Japan series. I really don't think it was a disaster. It was just that everything that he tried didn't work.
Yeah, I didn't agree with some of his things, but that's done. I mean, that's done. We got to move on. But
I wonder a little bit about
that. He could have done better, but I don't think they would have won the series.
Now, the Hawks, the Hawks went through 10 years with the worst big game manager in Japan, Sadaharu Oh. So maybe that's where they're going now.
Well, I think
He won two Japan series. So, okay.
Who did?
Sadaharu Oh.
Oh, so he won. He won with them, but
he won twice, and he won a WBC by accident. So,
all right. Let's make a four-seam transition and go rocking with Roki. So the rumors had been running rampant since the offseason, basically, in Japan, but even before that. And then the Marines announced this past week they were posting him finally. So Jim had heard things. I had seen things. I cracked open an ESPN story today talking about the fact that Sasaki has been posted. And it's so funny. Sometimes I spell the word fandom F-A-N, and then I put a hyphen in it and put D-U-M-B. And
I was waiting for that one.
And somebody said, they called up a radio show and they said, the Dodgers are going to get Rory Sasaki. And I'm like, oh, dude, how do you even have a phone? You know, Rory Sasaki, that's what we're doing here. So, I mean, that's why I spell the word that way, because sometimes fans, they really, maybe they got a little little fan juice in them or something, and they just, they've been at the ballpark with a few with the hot dogs and the fan juice, and they're just stumbling around. They don't know what's coming out of their mouth. They don't know what's coming out of their butts. They don't know what's coming out of anything. So,
wow. So. Yeah, excretion deleted here, man.
So anyway, big rumors that the Dodgers are supposed to get him, but I have arguments against that. So if you're ready, I'll present one of them, or a
Go
couple
ahead.
of them, or a few. But I just have to be honest. Rookie Sasaki did not have a good run this season. I'm not really convinced he's ready to go, and I don't think his manager is, based on some of the unfinished business comments I saw from what's it, Masato Yoshi of the Marines. But the Dodgers, I think, aren't really ready for him. They're going to have, with Shohei Ohtani ready to get back, or likely to get back on the mound, and Clayton Kershaw, hanging on to every last glove he's got to get back on the mound again with them. He's a starting pitcher. I don't, if there's a, if he's healthy, he's got an opportunity to throw. And then they're going to have some of their many of their guys come back from injury: Dustin May, Gavin Stone, and some other guys. And we're talking guys who pitched some significant innings in the past for the Dodgers. So and then you've got Yoshinobu Yamamoto and whoever else they keep in free agency. There's really no room this season for Rookie Sasaki to come in there and be a guy who consistently pitches. Now, that that's given, or assuming Clayton Kershaw can stay healthy for at least half a season, which I'm not convinced he can, but still, that doesn't really leave room in, if they, unless they're going to have a six-man rotation, which is possible with Ohtani in the fold, that they could do that. But I'm not seeing that right now. And then
Okay.
I'm very confident Sasaki can get major league players out, but we did see him not pitch all that well in the WBC. Now, that's a couple of, small sample size games, and whatever you want to say about that, but he wasn't great. Maybe he wasn't used to the mounds and all those other things. We know that there are other factors involved. Plus, when you have a team situation, things can be different. But I know that the Padres have been mentioned as a team that has interest. Both New York teams have been mentioned as teams with interest. The Giants have to be tossed into the ring, and let's not forget the Seattle Mariners. So, as I sum up this thing, and I'm sorry to go for so long, because I know you have a lot to say about all the things I've already said. But I guess the usual suspects are out there. But we have to remember, there's not a huge monetary figure that we're going to be looking at. So I think a
Correct.
lot of teams are in play here, and it's going to depend on which team can give Sasaki that first taste of Major League Baseball, and then perhaps say, we know you're going to sign with a big market team. Goodbye, but we want the first couple of years. So,
Okay.
what do you think?
Well, first of all, I'm going to put the past in the past.
Okay.
If you want to read about why I think Sasaki was posted, you should go to jballallen.com. That'll save us a lot of time today.
Okay.
There is a long explanation of why I'm skeptical that Lotte is posting him when they stand to make maybe $1 million tops.
Okay.
Okay, it doesn't make any sense for them to do it, except for the reasons they have stated. Okay, now I'm going to read you something I just got, and this is from the person who I cannot name who is representing Rookie Sasaki in
Okay.
MLB. And
Are you sure you just didn't name him? Well, go ahead. Not by name, but
no,
yeah.
no, but basically. This goes to the issue of the Dodgers. He said, "Why should we care where he signs beyond his own best interest for short-term and long-term success? We prefer he's in a smaller media market with a softer landing after the way he's been tarred and feathered by the Japanese tabloid media for 2 years." There you go.
Okay.
So the agent is thinking a small media market is, of course. If you're an agent, you want every and basically you want the best deal for your guy, and it doesn't matter where it is. Now, Rookie Sasaki may have other things going on, and we don't know, but
Okay.
the whole thing is, the agent is basically saying it's important, and of course this is not public, and I can't say who it is, but. There are They are basically saying everybody's in play. It's 100% about what we and Roki think is, are in his best interest for short term and long term. So it's not like the Dodgers are, you know, they haven't already started booking suites for him in LA. Well, they might have, but you know, but that's not obvious.
Yeah, I don't see any room there. I mean, you know, I haven't heard anything but Dodgers. That's the thing. But if you think about guys who have gone over there, pitchers who have gone over there, players who have gone over there in recent years and recent decades, you got to think West Coast. You've got to think easy. When they said easy or soft landing, I say, you know, whatever can get him that experience right away. Because I think
exactly
that's.
I mean, Shohei Ohtani flourished at the Anaheim Angels. Excuse me, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
Yep. You know, I think it doesn't have to be a high profile. It's all the things that I just stated. I think that makes its own. And I didn't know about those comments from the from that person, so that source. So that's what I'm thinking. So yeah, it should be a fun watch. I personally would like to see Seattle again on the map with a Japanese player. That's always a good landing spot, and then we get to see him on the West Coast. And well, I say that now, but I keep forgetting I'm not in Japan anymore, Dorothy. it's hard watching West Coast sports when you're on the East Coast time. In that
used
time
to be,
zone,
used
yeah.
to be easy.
Used to be easy. Used to be not when you have to get up early. So, I'm gonna enjoy this run here through the end of the year. Now, what's the window again? And once they post them, because you said you're not even sure they are really going to post it, but they said they are. So
no, they said yesterday they are, and they said the reason for doing it is because they've looked at his body of work over the last 5 years and said we listen to his desire every day to go to MLB, and we feel we need to give him this chance. And so I want to ask the Lotte Marines if the next year in the playoffs, maybe they're playing the Hawks. And so, you know, the Hawks were so passionate about baseball this year, we should just let them win because they deserve it. You know, this is it makes sense like that. So I'm getting this vibe, and I posted this, that the Hawks telling you that the only reason they're posting Roki Sasaki is out of the goodness of their hearts and out of their concern for his desires is like a doctor telling you the patient died because he lacked the will to live instead of the five bullet holes in him.
Oh yeah, or my hand might have slipped during surgery, but yeah,
yeah. It's not the bullet holes. The bullets didn't kill him. He lacked the will to live. So that's basically I mean, I'm not saying the Marines are lying, because you know who knows. Maybe that's the way that Lotte operates, but we've never seen it in the past, so it's a new thing. So anyway, it's a mystery right now. Who knows?
Well, I did see your exchange with what's his name, Steve, on Twitter.
Steve Novosel, yeah.
Yeah, Love Marines, is it?
Or, yep.
Yeah.
At Love Marines, sure.
At Love Marines. And so, I mean, you know, you talk about the system, but I also, one of the guys who follows our show, guy who usually reposts I haven't done social media
Robin
when I posted
TBD.
The show. Yeah, he reposts our show, and he talked about the fact that the system is bad and that, you know, there's a hole in it, and this could be something that we see again with a post that he sent out. So, yeah, it's true, but nothing is perfect. I don't think there is a perfect system out there. And
I think, the problem, there are two problems, but the easy fix is to give teams compensation draft picks if they can't sign their guy. So in that case, you know, if a player comes and says, I don't want to play, I only want to play for you if you'll let me sign, you know, you'll pay me $1 million and let me go in 2 years, you know, and then they have a choice. Well, we can pay you and keep you, but we get nothing. We're only going to do it because if we don't want to lose our first round draft choice. But if they get another first round draft choice the following year, they have some leeway. They have some room to maneuver. They can say it's not worth it to
right.
do this.
Right.
But and NPB could fix that in a heartbeat. They have not done so far because until now, the Yomiuri Giants have believed that anytime somebody wants to play for them, they want to discourage other teams from bidding on him in the post in the draft. So if you don't get him, or if he doesn't sign with you, like Tomoyuki Sugano did not sign with the Nippon Ham Fighters, they will be punished. They want to punish teams who try to poach Giants draft picks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they, like I said, there's no perfect system. And in this case, and in the case of, as you wrote, Shohei Ohtani also having a lot of leverage because they were high profile players coming out of sure. high school. Some guys are going to have more power. It's not fair. It's not, you know, it's wow. not the same for everyone. You know, if you can develop over time and become a Hall of Fame player in your career here, that's great. If you come out as a highly touted young player and you're great from the start, that's your path. And there's just different paths for different players. And I don't think they're going to be able to fill all the holes, unfortunately.
No, but there are some obvious ones that are, you know, the Japanese baseball. And I think for me, this is the, since I was a little boy, I've been fascinated by hacks and shortcuts. How can you do this better than everybody tell? How can you do this easier, more cheaply, more quickly, more, you know, smarter than everybody else tells you you have to? And Japanese baseball has so many little loopholes and quirks that it absolutely thrills me to learn more about all these little, you know, points of leverage. You know, the Hideo Nomo going to MLB because he retired because the rules didn't cover that.
Right.
And Carter Stewart's situation where he can, you know, come to Japan and be a highly paid free agent, then go back to America and be a highly paid free agent. You know, these things are all are its quirks are why I love it. And, you know, and I hope they fix them. You know, they'll fix them one by one. But this is a painful lesson. Unless every NPB team says, oh, yeah, the Marines were just kind, so we don't need to do anything. The only reason this is happening is out of the kindness of their hearts. Right. But I don't think you could find 12 adults that are that stupid.
Oh, we just had an election here. I think you could find 12.
Excuse me. Well, okay. I don't think you could find 12 adults in Japan that are that stupid.
Okay, thank you.
And, okay, right. if we said 100 million, then we know where we're going with that.
Okay, yeah. All right, one last thing. We always do it at the end of the season. We pick out our favorite moment of the season, and if you'll indulge, I'd like to go first.
Go ahead.
All season long, I could just never forget the moment in the All-Star game when DeNA BayStars rookie Ryuki Watarai played in the All-Star game in front of his father at the venue, Jingu Stadium, where his father also played as a pro, and just the happiness the father, you could see him experiencing, just the thrill that must have been for Watarai as a young player himself, as a rookie. So that was going to be my moment, but you know, and I hate to be prisoner of the moment in this case, but it just all changed with the Japan series and seeing Daisuke Miura react after his team beat the Hawks to win the Japan series. And that's my moment. I'm sorry. It's probably weak to pick that one because it's the last image that I have of the whole season. Those two are going to rank up there, but I'm going to pick Miura as my favorite because it was just so unexpected, and he did such a magnificent job as a full season of managing the whole season and not just a few games here and there, and managing all the players and getting them all to perform. Now, I'm crediting him, obviously, but there are a lot of people involved, but he's the guy. I mean, you know, when did I tell my dad the other day? I'm like, if you go out and you're the doctor and the patient doesn't survive the surgery, they don't blame the anesthesiologist. So in this case,
they do in Japan.
Oh, okay. Well, normally
we've both worked at the Yomiuri. We know that blame makes the world go round.
Yeah, there's a bad headline. The trash crew gets blamed, but
pretty much.
But yeah, if Miura is going to be the guy in charge and the team comes through, you know, I'm going to say that I'm going to give the credit to him, or the bulk of the credit to him. So that's my moment. What about you?
Well, I'll balance you out by going back to April.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a 2-year story. Last year, Hotaka Yamakawa was persona non grata at Seibu, and because of the allegations of sexual assault and rape.
Mm-hmm.
And he was not prosecuted due to a lack of evidence, which does not mean he was not guilty, sure. But it is what it is. Okay. Now, he has said it. He said when he was finally allowed to speak to the media at the end of the year, he said, "I can't talk about it because there are other legal issues still involved."
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't make excuses. He said, you know, people make mistakes. You know, he didn't go into details. He said, people make mistakes. And I obviously should have done better for my family and the people who care about me. And that's all he said. Okay. But he was at the end of the season, he was still under indefinite suspension by the Cebu Lions.
Mm-hmm.
And he said,
in the last season, yes.
At the end of last season, the 2024. Season, and he said, "I don't know if I want to be a free agent or not." But the Lions basically didn't take a step. The Lions wanted him to stay, but they didn't do a step to do any. They didn't do anything about it. You know, they just probably assumed he was going to stay because he wanted to prove something to them or something. You know, that's the way the Lions have operated for the last 10 years, and this is the heart of the problem. Anyway, so he left. For the SoftBank Hawks, and who I don't know, I believe in second chances, but I also believe in you have to earn a second chance by doing something. And I don't know what he's done, and so I don't know if this is a deserving one, but I have known him. And in any case, he put all that nonsense. I don't want to say nonsense because this allegations were very serious, but
yeah,
he put his personal stress behind him, whether right or wrong, I don't know. But he put that behind him. And when he appeared in his first game at the Dome Stadium, formerly known as Prince, his former home ground up in Tokorozawa, he was booed mightily by the fans. You know, they didn't boo him last year when there were allegations of sexual assault and rape, but they booed him when he moved to another team, which tells you a little bit about baseball fans.
Right.
So they booed him.
Note the way I sometimes spell fandom. Yes.
Yeah. And then, yeah, fans are fans. Okay. Be fans. That's fine. That's your job. Anyway, two games. It was in the next game or the day after. It was April 13th, which was my wife, Terrio's birthday. And, Yamakawa made a statement, and he hit two home runs, and the first one was an ordinary one. The second one was a mammoth one. And that whole thing of like the Cebu fans going like, what have we done?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that. I do remember that game. So I don't necessarily remember that moment in particular, but I do remember the game, and it was good for him. And I did mention early on how he was a little bit, I wouldn't say surly, but he was a little bit cold toward the media because
He was the whole year. Yeah. He was the whole year.
Except, he loosened up in the second half a little bit more, but yeah, he was basically,
I'll tell you,
you guys were monsters toward me during this whole trial and tribulation that I went through. So, you know, why should I talk to you now? Was his attitude.
When I saw him in May briefly, I said, can we talk? He says, I got trainer's stuff to do. He said, can you come back tomorrow? And I said, I cannot because of work. And as it turned out, the Olympics kept me away from going to ballparks for much of the summer.
Mm-hmm.
We never spoke after that. But when I saw him, and we had talked a lot a few years before COVID, did a fairly long story on his difficulties getting regular playing time. And when he saw me, he kind of lit up and said, yeah, let's go back. Let's turn back the clock a bit. So don't know. But the thing is, I really want to ask him is, how do you deal with your life being in the toilet? you know, how do you get through that?
Yeah, well,
because we've all don't flush, but we've all been there. Everybody gets it, and I'm not saying everybody gets it because they've done things that were borderline illegal or definitely illegal, but we've all done things we regret. And so I really want to hear his side of that, not his side of the story, but that part of the story.
Okay. All right. Well, it was a great season in Japan, in Japanese baseball, ending with a great Japan series and a surprise ending. So just really fun run. We are going to take a break for a while, for sure. I need to get settled into a new place here. And like I said, I'm in Alabama. I'm visiting the family I haven't seen in 3 months. So that's fun. And we'll be back sometime before the end of the year. And certainly if Sasaki signs with some place, we'll talk about that when it's time. And I have some guests lined up. So we'll figure out how we'll get to that stuff as we head toward the end of the year and into the new year. But everybody, thank you very much for a really fun season. Appreciate it. Hope you enjoyed it. Anyone who has a question, send it to us via x.com at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Send questions via email to yakyuhn@gmail.com or hit us up on the Facebook page and leave us a message there. Look for us on iTunes. We will talk to you next time. Enjoy your off season.
Be at the ballparks, wherever they may be.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. And feel free to submit your questions by email or tweet with hashtag High Heat. Thank you for listening to Japan Baseball Weekly.